Walk the land. Try and be connected. There's a classic phrase I say, you looked, but you did not see. You do not see the environment, the interconnection of things. So maybe if people can go bush more in a simple way, they will become more connected rather than just watching the footy and having a beer or whatever and putting the bulldozer through the next set of trees.
Hello and welcome to Understory. I'm Elizabeth Poe. And this week, Understory revisits a favourite interview as the environment meets publishing with Simon Neville, author, photographer, designer, publisher and ornithologist.
Yes, I'm Simon Neville and I have done so many things. I'm a changer. For my sins, I'm English originally, although I hate to be called a POM because I'm very Australian. I've travelled all over Australia, every part of the continent. And I love it, and I feel connected to the land.
Regular listeners may prefer to assume that the majority of people know and understand the environment. But there are some people, even many people, who need to be shown, through a lens perhaps, how special our world is. Simon Neville spoke with Understory's Adrian Glamorgan about his connection to land and about his publishing house.
How did you get into publishing and when?
Well, I've got to go back to the beginning. The hobby of ornithology, the study of birds, was always there. Father showed me. And then coming to Australia, the parrots just blew me away. The colours, and the beauty of the country. So my journey was, I was qualified in furniture design at the London College of Furniture. Many of my fellow students came out here. What did that lead me to was design, and then I decided to give back to students, and I taught at TAFE. Left there to go back into the pressured world and designed offices. So I guess my core skill is design. It sounds so modest, I hate saying it, but I have an amazing talent to create any concept, but it has to be creative. I produce books that have to sell, so there's a creativity in that. So going back to the design, I was very successful, but I suddenly decided to do bird tours. It was a bit insane because I made very little money. I went from making a lot of money to no money. But at a serious level, I had the benefit of travelling this vast country. It led to taking international bird tour groups. And you learn over time all the calls, the bird calls.
And in his travelling of the bush and desert, with sometimes tourists and other times just his camera, Simon Neville has connected with many people.
Because tours are very pressured. People are wonderful, generally. But you can get 10% of our population can be very difficult, as you well know. That was often a strain after 18, 19 days travelling. You've got to be almost a psychologist.
And a saint.
Yes, well, I knew someone who was. His name was Kevin Coate. As his wife said, he's a saint. He would rock with the punches and smile all the time. I couldn't always do that, but I was very, very professional, and I think I came to the fore with international groups. The Americans taught me something, which was I wanted to be liked. I was relaxed. I wouldn't always set ground rules, and we'd just start in a very casual way. Well, they didn't want that. It was, Simon, we need to know where we're going, at what time, and what's going to happen. Just one thing I learned in teacher training, because I was a qualified designer, but suddenly you have to become a qualified teacher. One of the few things I got out of it was, what is your terminal objective? Which was such a good statement, because as a creative person, I'd sit with my students, I'd just create. But of course, I didn't answer the question, what do you want your students to achieve at the end? So on a tour, I learned in the morning, always with a smile on my face, I learned to say, right, I'm sorry, folks, but tomorrow we're going to get up at 6 o'clock. Many of you won't like this, but it's the only way we've got to start. So in other words, I learnt to set ground rules and not get close to people. I had to stand back and just give this professional side, and it worked.
So were you taking photographs while you were on tour?
No, on tour, it would be seen bad if I was to take photographs of birds or whatever. So no, it was purely guiding and identifying species, and they'd come with their international guides because they would mother the group and make sure I was doing my job.
So what brought you to stop that and become a publisher?
Just the pressure of it. It created a lot of pressure. Remember, I've been with a group for 18 days. The pressure is immense. Up really early, working 15 hours a day, and maybe a difficult client as well, who's always complaining about the food or the whatever. You know, gee whiz, we're not going to have more pumpkin soup, are we again, Simon? Or we never got that bird we're after, you know. I'll need to see this bird. You don't quite say, well, birds do fly. I thought, I've got to leave this, and I did.
Well, how would you describe your collected works of publications? What have you focused on, and why has it been important for Western Australians that you've been doing this for us?
Well, that's a good question. Obviously, my ground base is wildlife, the love of nature, and I have to travel. I have to see trees pass me. So there's that linkage with the desert, the Kimberley. I feel connected with the blackfellas I know in the desert. And by the way, I'm not using First Australians or the first. I'm a white fella, they're a blackfella, that's how they talk to me. But I'm very connected to these people. So I have a love of nature, but still the underlying thing is I have to put on my sales hat with the bookstores, Dimmocks or wherever. So I don't do much bird photography and I don't do much birding, which is a pity. But I'm concentrating on the artistic. I'm bringing back my true design creativity. If I ran through all the books, there's a Common Wildflowers, which was a cheap book geared to sell high volumes just to help people who didn't want to spend $27 on a guide to the wildflowers. So I did that. I did the Perth and Fremantle past and present history, trying to bring back a bit of culture. And my main expertise, you could ask me a lot on ornithology, so my bird book, that is a qualified book. And my panorama book I've done, I love beautiful pictures. But there will be no more books except the Wheat Belt book I have to finish in retirement because I've interviewed 30 farmers, wonderful people, some of them millionaires, some of them struggled. And also I've written on all the explorers going through the Wheat Belt, their history and maps. And I have 300 images from the Batty dating back around the 1800s. And the amount of farmers are saying to me, Simon, when are you going to get this bloody book done?
What's the highs and the lows of producing a book?
I think it's like an artist who would walk in, and I will get back to painting and drawing, and that's what I'm looking forward to, because I did teach watercolour work, is a painter would walk in and suddenly they hadn't seen their painting for a long time, and they say, wow. So there's that joy. And so in a book, the joy is to see it come back from the printers because you haven't seen it for a while. And you turn the page and say, shit, did I do that? Amazing. I do amaze myself. You know? So to see your work, you sometimes think, well, I can do it. But I will be departing, doing books for and working with bookstores. I've just had enough of printing because I was a one-man band. I would print, get the printing done, get the graphics sorted, I design the books, I distribute the books. So it's a full-on load. But I'm walking away from that to, I don't know what I'm going to do, but people can't believe it. The bookstores say, well, you've got to have these books, but I'm slowly running out of the book you've got there, the Perth Wildlife book, and I'm going to travel and connect with the land and desert and live on the smell of an oil rag, to be honest.
What are some of your favourite places in Western Australia? Obviously, you've travelled a lot, so there must be many, but what comes to mind right now?
Oh, definitely the Kimberley. Pictorially, as a landscape photographer, the Pilbara is the most stunning. There are, like Kermit's Pool, they nicknamed it Kermit's Pool. I'm sure there'll be, I've forgotten the tribe up there, they'll bring an indigenous name for it. but there's spectacular colours that you can get, awesome, as the young kids would always say. The Kimberley, though, is my favourite area. It's the last area I can escape people. I take a track where few people go, and I wander and look at Wandjina galleries in total peace. I will not publish those. I have in the past taken some pictures. That stops now. So the Kimberley, and why do I love the Kimberley? I love station owners. If I have to be on a desert island, I'd far rather be with station owners or farmers. Many farmers, yes, many are using chemicals. There's the engineer-geared farmer who will just rip and take out everything and is into business and the turnover. But Kimberley station owners, they're connected with the land.
One of the things that we tend not to talk enough about is sound and the silence of the bush. Are the remote areas attractive to you partly because human sound's much reduced?
You're a very perceptive interviewer, very much so. There's peace and quiet, but the sounds of the species, a joy for a bird watcher. Example in the Fitzgerald National Park, I'm photographing flowers. I've changed my objective. It's no longer birds, but behind me is a very rare bird, Western Bristlebird calling. I don't even move from the camera, but it was that silence and that. And I say, I know who you are. You know, it was. And he was just calling behind me. So, yes, there's a silence, but there's also a noise. There's a connection with the bush, and I love it, and a peace and quiet.
In the Tenterden fires of 2003, the southwest town was ravaged by a massive fire, the late December day closing on the deaths of two women, as well as destruction of five homes, many thousands of stock animals, and a vast area of paddocks and bush. Simon Neville prepared for the worst, not expecting to survive the wall of fire.
Can you just explain what happened when the fire came through your property?
Yes, the block starts to burn with the ashes falling. I had a big firefighting hose as well as the sprinkler, so I'm hosing underneath, and then suddenly everything goes grey and the sound of 50 roaring trains are coming at you. Closed off the hose and ran inside. I had a big living room, but I thought, I'm gone. There's no way I'll come through this. And I stood in the middle of the big living room, opened my arms. I don't follow any given faith, but I can't release myself to the inevitable. And I woke up, would you believe, to the smoke alarms going off. I thought, what is this? And I opened the sliders. I couldn't even go out. The radiant heat. And I had 10 metres of gravel between the house and the bush on purpose, so you can appreciate the radiant heat. So that's what happened.
You've had a lot of trials and tribulations, floods in York or fires down in Mount Parker. What do you find the hardest?
Yes. It's not the person you pull in just before the crocodiles are about to come up on the South Alligator River that gets you. Or the Tenterden fire that comes through and you realise you've survived afterwards, but you don't cry, you deal with it. It's not the flood that I had in York, and that wasn't really serious. It's Homo sapiens. If you were an indigenous tribe wandering the land, you become a tribal elder not by age, but by the quantity of wisdom that the whole group respect you with. If you were devious and doing bad things, you actually were punished.
Simon Neville, you've got so much experience crossing this country, not just Western Australia, but right around. You may have been English born, but you have become Australian in many, many ways. You know the land perhaps better than many people have been born here. But for a younger generation who spend more time on the internet than they might in their backyard, how would you go about encouraging them to encounter the environment, to see it as something more than just difficult elements that have to be conquered and dealt with and perhaps run away from back into the car and back to the city?
Lovely question. I always say there's a disconnect with the computers. We have these stages. The 3-year-olds are even more streetwise on a computer than the 10-year-olds. They're hardwired now to a computer. And I say to the parents, you take your children into the bush. Now, I'm not asking you, I'm telling you, you take your children to connect with the land because they'll end up, you know, being disconnected with the environment. Having a love for it, they can come back to it. So, yes, you must start young and teach. Personally, I have an internal strength, but going to the environment, that lifts my spiritual connection. I don't follow any given religion. The closest is Buddhism, by far. But I believe in a great energy and a connection with good people like yourselves. As I say, I don't follow given faith, but if you are connected with a greater force, you are environmentally connected. You don't have to dream up gods, but you are part. We are of this earth. Our chemicals, our breakup, we are part of evolution. And the sooner we start to understand that we're made up of atoms and connected, we have ownership on this land as well. We need to do things.
You've been with Understory and Adrian Glamorgan meeting with local publisher Simon Neville. I'm Elizabeth Poe. You can hear again and share this and other environmental programs by searching Understory blog. Then tune in same time, same planet next week when there'll be more to explore on Understory.